Blog Talk Radio. Firefly Willows LIVE presents What's Your Prescription for Balance? As promised, we're always thinking of ways to bring you a fresh new perspective. Check out this lineup of our newest shows. The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring Firefly Willows LIVE favorite, Heisey Lutmers, and his co-host, Charlie Harrington, on the second Tuesday evening each month. A Shamanic Life, hosted by John Carosella, on the first and third Tuesday evenings each month. The brand new Embracing Change, The Joy of a New Path, with career coach Ivan Teams and John Carosella, the fourth Tuesday evening of each month. What's Your Prescription for Balance, with Mildred Lynn McDonald and her co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, the first Thursday afternoon each month. And Evolve, with Robin White Turtle Lisney, the third Thursday afternoon each month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows LIVE.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your co-host for What's Your Prescription for Balance, live from Sebastopol, California. We'd like to thank you for joining us today. We also hope to inspire you with the leading trends and best practices of holistic living, alternative medicine, and life coaching, with some laughter thrown in for fun. In a few minutes, we'll be joining my co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Then we'll beam over to Mabou, Cape Breton Island, to chat with our special guest, Madonna McGuinness. In today's episode, Madonna, who's a graduate of the National Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts in New York, will help us put the soul back in food. First, she'll walk us through her own healing journey that began when she started to look at food as medicine. Then we'll explore where food comes from, how we can buy our food, and how to prepare food so we can eat more soulfully and ultimately improve our well-being and health. Madonna will also give us 10 tips and share one of her favorite recipes. It's going to be a great show. So please mark your calendars and join your hosts, Dr. Glenna and myself, Mildred Lynn, the first Thursday of every month at 3:30 Pacific, and for those of you on the East Coast, 7:30 Atlantic. We really hope that What's Your Prescription for Balance will leave you energized, more knowledgeable, and inspired from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. And now, let's sashay over to the East Coast and welcome Dr. Glenna and our special guest, Madonna McGuinness. Glenna and Madonna, are you there?
We're here. I'm here.
So this is
Glenna
speaking.
I'm here.
And this is Madonna speaking.
This is Madonna.
Well, I'm so happy that the three of us can be together again. And for our listeners out there, Glenna and Madonna and I did a show. I believe it was in 2012, wasn't it? One of the earliest shows, Madonna. You were the guest?
That's correct, yes.
Yes.
Last year.
This time last year, so the odometer has turned over. And for our listeners, I want them to understand how beautiful Cape Breton Island is. So, Madonna, would you like to let us know what the weather's like there today, or a little nugget of beauty?
Spring is definitely arrived in Cape Breton Island. It was a little bit of a gray day, but we had some sun, and the air is warm. And I'm looking out at the daffodils that are popped up in the garden.
And Glenna, what are things like in Halifax, Nova Scotia?
In Halifax, we've got a little rain about here and there, as Halifax usually is in the spring, a little bit here. Then we get some sun for an hour, and then we get a couple drops of rain, and then we'll get some sun for a couple hours. So it keeps us on our toes.
Yeah. And I'm here in Sebastopol, California. It's a bright, sunny day because there is a four-hour time difference. It's a bright, sunny day. It's on the warm side. We just planted a garden about 3 weeks ago, and just before we went on the air, I went outside to ground myself
and I looked at the different flowers growing and the melons growing and the different vegetables. Very pristine, very healthy, organic soil, organic air, organic sun, all the good stuff to make things really healthy, which is a good segue into what we're here to talk about today.
So, Mildred, were you in your bare feet?
I wasn't in my bare feet. I'll have to do that for the next show. That's an excellent idea, Glenna.
Yeah, you'll do it for the next show and let us know what the difference is.
That's right. What can we anticipate that the difference might be?
I think you're going to feel more energy from the earth.
Okay.
And you might feel some more grounding there, being so close to the earth.
So if people are listening and they're interested in grounding energy, you would recommend as a naturopathic doctor to take your shoes off and go and walk in the grass?
Definitely. For one of the best things to do to ground yourself is to take your shoes off and just go walk in your yard, your lawn. Some people do it every morning, which is a great remedy. Just get up, go outside, and for about 15 minutes, and that's how they start the day, to ground themselves.
Now, Madonna, have you done this or do you do this practice?
Absolutely. That connection to the earth, up through our feet and our legs, to our heart, everything. I think it's really critical, and it's hard to do that in some places in the world during the 12 months of the year. This is one of them. But this time of year, it's a definite bonus to feel that grass, that lovely cool grass on your feet, and just to feel that connection to the earth.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try it next time. So thanks for mentioning that, Madonna and Glenna. So we're here today for our listeners because we had a really good discussion about food, and you would have to live under a rock and not listen to the news or watch TV or something similar to start to understand that our food supply may not be exactly as we had imagined it to be. Things may be a little bit different. And when Glenna and Madonna and I came together, one thing we did agree on is that when people eat, most people would like to be in integrity with what they put in their mouth most of the time. And so we had a great conversation about food and soul and integrity. So I'd love to throw that out to both Madonna and Glenna. When I say bringing the soul back to food, how does that make you feel?
I think that what it means to me is to have people think about their food and be aware of their food and slow down with their food and taste their food, think about where it's coming from, and to give the food attention. And I think that that does a lot for our health, because if we're doing that, then it will slow us down during our meals. And from a naturopathic perspective, that does a lot of great things in terms of our digestion. Going into parasympathetic state helps us to our cortisol levels, our stress levels to come down, and our digestion then turns on. And that's what we need to absorb nutrients. So I think that's an excellent way to put it.
So, Glenna, what I'm finding is happening with me, and this has been happening over the last 2 years, is that I'm learning more about how our food is produced and supplied to us. And that doesn't always match up with who I am. So I end up a little bit disappointed in the food, or I don't feel good about food. Have you run into this with your patients, expressing that sentiment?
Yes, and I'm careful as a naturopathic doctor when I'm talking about lifestyle and diet changes to meet them where they're at and not to go 10 steps forward, because it can be overwhelming. And when we get overwhelmed, it's hard to do any of the steps, even the simple steps. So it's important to go, okay, what's my next step in improving my diet and in educating myself, and not to overwhelm yourself and to take it in pieces. Okay, this month, this is where I'm going to focus, and these are the changes I'm going to make. Wait until you're comfortable with that to then go looking for more information and to integrate more steps.
Okay. Now, Madonna, if Glenn and I were to say to you, how do we put the soul back in food, will you catch that ball? Where would you run with it?
Well, for me personally, and I think it's worth thinking about the connection for me between my spirit, my soul, the spirit of the animal or the mm-hmm. plant that I'm prepared to cook and eat, and the spirit and the soul of the farmers and the workers who have helped grow that food. And without judgment about what other people have access to, I myself don't always have access to the kind of food that I would prefer to have access to, meaning food that's grown in a genuine, respectful way for the animal, for the earth, for the plants. But I guess for bottom line, I've thought a lot about this the last couple of days. The approach, as Glenna is saying, the approach that you take to your food, what does it mean to you? What does it mean to your body? What is it going to do for your spirit and your body, and that connection between spirit and body? And to just really approach food with love, lots of love, for the food, for yourself, and for the people who have helped produce it.
Mm-hmm.
I think
that's
if we
nice
think point. About those things, that it helps everything.
Mm-hmm. So, Madonna, you went on a healing journey, and the key critical point was when you realized that food was medicine.
Yes, I have Crohn's disease, which is otherwise known as inflammatory bowel disease, and I'm very fortunate in that I've been able to figure out how to manage using food as my medicine. And I had periods of illness repeatedly for about 20 years, and in 1995, really reached a low point, and have a younger sister who is very skilled in macrobiotic information and cooking, and she helped me start to look at food as healing, as food that could be utilized to calm my body down, calm the inflammation down. And over a period of many years since then, it's really been a journey for me to really explore the different foods that work for my body, to explore the issues around food in North America today, how we grow it, how we transported everything, and that finally led me to a study in New York at the Natural Gourmet Culinary Institute, which is a holistic school which focuses your training really on two aspects, from a culinary aspect, but also a nutrition aspect. So I came out of that education process really committed to myself to maintain a way of eating, a way of looking at food, of being with food, just for myself, really, and hoping that my abilities and my example maybe would be of interest to other people. And it's working. I am human. I fall down. I sometimes do eat the wrong things, and I immediately feel that impact. But eating a certain way for me has, I believe, helped my spirit to grow. I guess that's the best word. It's helped it to reach a place that it has an ability to see the world in a much different way than I was seeing my world in 1994. It just feels completely, completely different and so much better, so much healthier.
Mm. Now, Glenna, you're a mom and you have two little ones. So when you're talking about being in integrity with your food or bringing soul into your food, that extends to your to your children, where mm-hmm. do you put that? How do you?
With kids, I guess I feel pretty lucky to have the knowledge I do is from naturopathic medicine before I had my children. So right from the day one, I was very committed to their health and what they're putting in their body. And so it's even taken me further with my health because I'm not going to eat what I would feed them. So we eat the same food. So it means we pretty much have a kitchen here that's gluten-free and dairy-free and sugar-free. Because of my practice, I see a lot of effects from those foods. And so I think that we need to begin feeding our children a lot gentler, if you would, and less processed, mm-hmm. so that they're not going to have as many bowel conditions, allergy conditions, and side effects, which are illnesses from foods, from eating the wrong foods. So I think my kids, they love their food, they love their whole foods, and we don't. I think I've seen the effects with their health. Well, I know I've seen their effects with their health. By food is basically medicine here. It's nutrition, and it's not a treat, it's not a reward, it's not a punishment, anything like that. It's something we get to do to nourish our body.
Okay. Now, Madonna, we'd love to provide some guidance for our listeners who are interested in putting soulfulness back in food and being in integrity with what they eat and educating themselves on the food supply. Where would you like to start?
Well, we can talk about my 10 tips, which are really, I think, a guidepost for how I hope that I am able to live my life in relationship to food every day.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And the first one for me is, and Glenna has already talked about this, is to really think about the food that you eat. How does it feel when you look at it in the grocery store or at the farm stall? How does it feel when you have it at home and you're ready to prepare? And when you sit at the table and look at your food and begin to eat your food, how does that feel? Because the eyes are the first point of digestion. It's really important to just take time to observe your food. Your saliva builds up and your body starts that process, but you are in communion, so to speak, with your meal.
And it sounds to me like you have to slow down to do that.
Yes, you do. And you make decisions about, I think you make better decisions about what you are going to eat, what looks good on the plate, what goes together. You know, it's an enjoyable process. It's not something that you're racing through because you think you have to get some food into your body. You do definitely slow down.
So how do you balance... how do you balance food with fuel? Because I tend to lean towards, I'm not a foodie, so a lot of the time food for me is fuel.
Well, I think that, you know, food mainly is fuel, right? We can't operate in this life. We can't live. We can't exist. We can't do anything without food being the fuel that our bodies need. But for me, if I believe this, that if I take a certain approach to food in the beginning, then the fuel that my body creates through the digestion of the food, my body, my spirit rises to another level. That if I compare that to the way I used to eat, my body is so much happier, so much more energetic, and that fuel that is created, you know, the body is a furnace, right?
Mm-hmm.
the food goes in, and it goes through a process, and the organs benefit from that food, or they do not benefit from the food, depending on what you do. So I think that I don't think you have to be a foodie. I don't think that I am a foodie. I went to school with people who are foodies, and my approach is very simple. My meals are simple. Maybe to some people they look complex, but they really are not. So I just really try to keep my cooking, my preparation very simple, and worry about taste more than, you know, cooking for 5 hours.
Okay. Now, Glenda, did you want to jump in there or do tip number two with Madonna?
Well, I think I want to say, Madonna, I think that was a great way to put it, because in my practice, I encourage people to take a minute or two, especially people with any bowel conditions, to take a minute or two to sit so that their body can get ready for digestion. But you put it really nicely in that our body has to get ready, or because our eyes have to see the food. In some way, we have to tell our body the food's coming in whatever way we can, so that our salivary glands can start to do the job and put out enzymes and saliva. And if you're maybe on the phone, for example, and reaching for your first bite, your body's not going to be prepared for digestion before you get that bite in your mouth. And your stomach's not going to be prepared either, and neither or your pancreas to put out those enzymes. So it really does, even a minute or two makes a huge difference in how your organs and your whole digestive tract is going to benefit. So that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Number two.
Ready for number two?
Number two. Drum roll.
I know people will like this one. Purchase real whole food. Mm-hmm. People buy food that comes in boxes, and I can't do that. I haven't been able to do that for 20 years, and there is so much prepared food. I think I read a stat the other day that 90% of the food that is available in supermarkets was not, was not even created. It wasn't around 100 years ago. We didn't. All of this is such a modern way of eating, which our bodies are not ready for. They never will be ready for. And whole food, real food, is food that you recognize it. You know, you can see the parts of the food. You are able to identify them. Perhaps Glenna would like to say some more about that one.
Well, I guess I'm curious, because it's hard to get good food, like you've mentioned, in some places. So I'm curious, if somebody wanted to grow their own vegetables, what kind of plan would you give them? What would be the first vegetable you'd recommend that they start with?
Radishes are really easy to grow.
Okay.
Spinach is super easy to grow. And good lettuces. And people can do these things on their balconies, on window boxes. And I agree with you that it's very difficult for people to make a transition to finding ways to get fresh and farmer fresh. It's not always available in a lot of parts of the country. I watched Food Inc. for the second time. I saw it when it first came out, and there's one very poignant spot in the documentary. They interview a family who's really struggling financially. They have huge medical costs, and the cheapest way they can eat is fast food or food that does come from a box, you know. And how do people make that transition?
Well, I have one suggestion, Madonna and Glenna. I don't know if you're following this, but I'm a great advocate of vertical gardening and the type of vertical gardening where all you need is a window inside your house. And if you Google vertical gardening indoors, there's all kinds of kits available that you can order online, or even instructions on how to create your own. And I know this concept is new. It's very effective, and it may provide a way to get nice greens, at least nice greens.
Mm. Well, I know the pictures that you've shown on your Facebook, Mildred, are beautiful, of the vertical gardens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm in love with vertical gardens. I don't know what it is, but I have been for about a year and a half. To me, it seems like a common sense, practical, within reach solution for so many people, especially people who have long winter months. I just love it. I love the concept.
You're right. Yep.
Well, especially if you can grow these things indoors, you know, it's a great notion. Certainly.
Yeah, and it's a great starting point, because a lot of people, including myself, it's so difficult to take that first step. And then when you take that first step, the second and third and fourth and fifth steps organically sprout out, and you're developing an interest at the same time. So that would be my two cents worth, to give vertical gardening a whirl.
Mm, great idea.
Yeah.
And gardens, community gardens, are, they're reshaping North America. Every day we read about wonderful things that people are doing to grow food in unexpected places. And, you know, humans, we're all up to the challenge. We're all up to finding ways to make our lives better. And people are doing this every day. And, you know, gardens in schools and just little tiny patches can do a lot to create wellness in a family. And at the same time, there are, you know, farmers who are growing good food, farmers even in my area, which is, you know, very winter most of the year, and so you're not going to get vegetables of any kind probably until the beginning of June. But our growing season, people are growing until the end of October, and things like bottling of vegetables and canning of vegetables, those efforts are becoming popular again. And, you know, I think that for a lot of us in colder climates, we really do need to go back to the way of our grandmothers and look at those opportunities, look at opportunities to store down vegetables for the winter. And people were, in some respects, much healthier because of that, those efforts. So, you know, it's if you can't grow vegetables of your own, you can buy them at in the summertime in markets, and maybe with your children you can create some excitement in the house by making pickles and jarring vegetables and things like that.
Yeah, turn the TV off. Turn the TV off.
TV off.
And the pickling gear on, or whatever you would do.
Exactly.
So what about your next tip?
Well, that was pretty much number three,
okay.
You know, the support for ethical farmers. We really need to support farmers, and they don't necessarily need to be organic farmers. And, you know, not all farmers are able to afford to get their land to that particular quality of soil, but there are farmers who are ethical. They need our support. They are growing good food with minimal intervention on the earth, and they really need to be supported. And they're amazing. You know, the growth of markets is very, very interesting, what's happening in North America. And even in our province of Nova Scotia, I think the number of markets have grown by 200% in the last 5-6 years. So we can. They're more affordable in the summertime. And so we really, really need to do that. If we support our ethical farmers, then slowly but surely we will reduce the reliance on factory farming.
Yeah. And Madonna, what is an ethical farmer? You're using that term, wondering if you came across a definition for it for our listeners. What to look
for?
Well,
it's probably easier to understand if we compare farmers who are raising animals for food,
mm-hmm.
raising chickens and pigs for food, compared to most of the meat and poultry is produced in North America. And for me, it's not produced in an ethical manner because it doesn't respect the animal. And with respect to vegetables, farmers who are not overproducing, that they take time to nurture the earth, change crops, things that really work, I guess probably going back to the methods that our grandparents used when they were growing food, when they were raising animals for food, etc. So to me, that is ethical farming, where you have respect for the land and you have huge respect for the animal and the relationship between animal and man.
Now, Glenda, go ahead.
I was going to ask Madonna, and when you say respect for the animals, is that referring to, I guess, their life and where they're spending their time, whether it's outside, indoors, and outdoors, and also the methods that they're killed in for their food, to have them suffer the least.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, we're in partnership. We're in partnership on this earth. We have been in partnership with animals for over a thousand years. We rely on them for transport. We rely on them for food, for companionship. And in the factory farms of today where animals are raised, and they're not raised outdoors, they have no access to grass, and they're often slaughtered in ways that do cause some stress. And, you know, we could have an entire show on this topic alone. But, you know, they're people who are demanding that. I think that this is going to change. That I think that if we compare what happened with big tobacco over the last 35, 40 years, I really do believe that we will slowly but surely see consumers wanting and demanding change from government and from their producers.
I feel as people move away from being consumers and move towards being citizens, that there'll be a shift in what's acceptable and isn't acceptable, and there'll be also awareness and education. And so I agree 100% with you, Madonna. I really, that gives me hope. Now, either Madonna or Glenna, if someone's listening to what we're talking about and they're wondering if there's a documentary or a movie that they could watch to understand the topic a little better, is there anything that you've watched recently that you'd recommend?
Well, I watched Food Inc. Again this week.
Mm-hmm.
It was for the second time, and it's a really, really well-done movie. It's a few years old. It's about, I think it came out in 2009, but it's still appropriate, and it's not difficult even for younger age groups to absorb.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent movie too. And the other one is Forks Over Knives is another great one.
Great movie, yes.
Yeah.
Great documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Food Inc. And the other one's called Forks Over Knives.
Yes.
There's two resources that people can tap into. I think we're getting pretty close to tip number 5.
Yes. Well, we'll start combining some, because I think learning to cook and enjoying the preparation, to take the time to cook. If you don't know how to cook, you probably know somebody in your circle who does know how to cook, who you believe is a good cook. And cooks love to help. They love to teach, and just ask. I think it's, you know, it's really important for people just even to get the basics down, and then you can go from there, and there are a lot of things that you can teach yourself. And when you're preparing food, just to take the time to prepare your food, to enjoy the process. As you said before, Mildred Lynn, turn the television off.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are finished cooking, make sure, as Glenna said, make sure you sit down to eat, that you focus on the plate and eat without the television or the computer in front of you. Just take the time for you. It's a gift that you're giving yourself. And hopefully you're sharing that food with friends and family. And this next one, I think, is really important. And Glenna, I know, thinks a lot about this and talks to her patients a lot about this, is to start to key into the reaction that your body is going through while you're chewing your food and while you're eating. Just to take the time to feel that. And I think that people will find that very interesting, that it's not an obsessive thing. It's simply, how am I feeling? Is this meal replenishing? Is it giving me fuel? Is it giving me enjoyment? All of that good stuff.
And I'll take it one step further. And how do you feel after you eat?
How do
you feel the hour after? And then how do you feel the next morning when you wake up after what you've eaten the previous day? And that tells you a lot about what happens in your body with those specific foods.
Yeah, there are a lot of clues in that, aren't there?
There are. That tells you, it really tells you a lot. It tells you basically what all any blood test is telling us and any form of allergy testing. We know whenever I do allergy tests for patients, they very rarely are surprised. They often say, I thought that was bothering me, but they didn't really go with their gut, you could say, or their intuition, but they often say, oh, that food's been bothering me. I thought I was feeling funny after whatever it was, pineapple or whatever food it was for them that was bothering them.
So, Glenna, what's the difference between the food allergy, and people are familiar with that term, and food intolerance?
Okay.
And I know you can be tested for that.
Yeah, so a true allergy, and we want to pay respect to those who have anaphylactic allergies. It's a very specific thing that it's life-threatening and it's fatal, and that's an IgG antibody test. But then there's a whole spectrum of sensitivities and intolerances, and we've learned that, especially with gluten. Most severe is celiac, and then it's gluten intolerance, then it's wheat intolerance, gluten sensitivity. So although many people are getting tested, now they're coming back negative in conventional medicine, it's because there's a whole spectrum. There's people that they don't feel well. They take the gluten out, and they feel better. And so I think we're learning a lot quickly about sensitivities and intolerances. So when you're intolerant, your body can't deal with it. You produce such inflammation that you're either in pain, you get a migraine headache, you get such bloating that it's disturbing your day and distracting you. Those are the most common ones. And a sensitivity might be where you can handle certain amounts of the food, but beyond that, if you eat it day in and day out, then you don't feel well. It's a general not well feeling. And people get different symptoms from different inflammation, but it's most commonly joint pain, headaches, stiffness, and gastrointestinal symptoms.
Yeah, I know Madonna is an expert on this area, but I wanted to share this with our listeners. People who are out there and they're wondering, well, do I have a food intolerance? It's important for them to know that there is a test that can be done that clearly gives you foods that your body, I call it, I'm very simple, foods that my body likes and foods that my body doesn't like. And that is something that can be available through a naturopathic doctor, I believe. Glenna, you can correct me, or Madonna.
Yes, and a lot of different naturopaths do different testing, but there's some that are done in, most of them are private labs, because the mainstream medicine hasn't recognized them yet. However, they're accredited, and they test to see how your body's reacting to these foods, which is very valuable so that with that knowledge, you can never look away from that knowledge. Once you have it and you see it on paper, that your body's responding in a certain way to these foods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's really important, I think, you know, for people to explore their food wellness. And I know personally that without that exploration, particularly about gluten, I really would not be as well today as I am. And would, you know, it really, mine is a huge sensitivity because of the Crohn's, and it changes your entire life when you are living in that sensitive state all the time. You really don't have the energy, but you, more importantly, I don't think you have the spirit. You don't have that sense of wellness, that sense of being really part of the world, the part of the universe, and have an ability to really explore life at its highest levels. You know, I think it's hugely critical.
Now, what I'd love to do, if you guys are in agreement, is we'll take a little break. People mm-hmm. can stretch, and we're going to listen to a beautiful song by Canadian songwriter, singer, Lynn Miles. And the words to this song are very poignant, and they relate to the reality that many people are living through today. And then we'll come back and we'll do more tips. And I also wanted to let our listeners know that Madonna's tips will be available on the What's Your Prescription for Balance Facebook page. So if you have any questions for Madonna or for Glenna, please go to Facebook, What's Your Prescription for Balance, and we can have some fun there and have an interchange and share ideas. So let's listen to Lynn Miles, and we'll be back in 2 minutes. How does that sound?
Excellent.
All righty.
Great.
Okay.
There's fall in the trees and the world's on fire. The forecasts are in and they all look dire. There's gasoline and rainbows in the parking lot. We learned our lessons and then we forgot it. Everything is broken or about to break. The carrion birds took what they could take. We're blinded by the sun, we're crawling up a hill. We added it up and we can't pay the bill. We want bells to ring, we want doves to fly.
We're back again with Glenna and Madonna. How did you like that song?
That's a great song.
Yeah. I just wanted to explain there was a momentary pause because I had my mic on mute. So I apologize for that.
It's live radio, Mildred Lynn.
It's live radio. One too many buttons to press. So where are we now? We're in tip number six or tip number seven?
Oh, we're getting closer than that. You weren't looking and I combined a couple. It's really important to share your food with friends and family. You know, I live alone. I really try to make a point a couple of times a week of inviting people for lunch or dinner. I call my next door neighbor when I make a pot of something and ask her if she's eaten, and usually she hasn't. So, you know, it's just really important to do those things. And food is that much more enjoyable, that much more beneficial, I think, when you're eating with friends and family.
What's your address? I think I might move next door.
Anytime. We deliver.
Oh.
What happens? So making sure, if possible, that you're sharing your meal with someone. I'm sure on some level that must be a digestive aid also.
I think so. And you know, it's, Glenna can comment more on this, but for me, it's natural that humans need to live in community.
Yes.
Especially when we live alone, and I've lived alone off and on for quite a few years now, and for me, it's just not a natural state, and I don't think I enjoy the food as much when I'm by myself, day after day, eating alone.
Well, having a one-year-old and three-year-old, the odd meal I get alone, it might be a little more healing. Because I get to sit for the whole meal.
Yeah, exactly. So what else, Madonna, what else for our listeners out there would you want to share with them? About putting the soul into food, soul food.
Putting the soul into the food. I think that most of us want to see change. Want to continue to see change, want to continue to see farms change, that are everybody benefits from good food, that children benefit from good food, and I think that we need to vote and march with our wallets. We can do a lot with our wallets. I was reading a story just the other day about Walmart, and Walmart has gotten into groceries in a big way, especially in the United States, and they are the largest retailer in the world, and they're really being influenced by their consumers to stock organic foods, significantly stock organic foods, and I know we've all read about and heard about the battleground around GMO labeling in the United States, and Walmart has made a decision that they're not going to fight it anymore, that they're actually going to support GMO labeling in their stores. So, you know, change is possible. It really is. And I think if, you know, I look back at 30 years ago, how I was eating and what I thought was available and not available, look at where we are now.
Yes. And for our listeners who, yeah, I just want to step back for a second because we use the term GMO and people might not be 100% clear on what that is. And so this is a wonderful teaching moment. So Glenna or Madonna, what is a GMO and how does that impact us potentially?
Glenna, do you want that one?
Sure. So it's genetically modified food. So the genes of the food have been modified. So wheat is a wonderful example. So the chromosomes in the grain wheat have been so modified that it started out, I think, around 14 and is now up to about 46 or 48. And as the author of the Wheat Belly book says, we have 46 chromosomes and orangutans have 48. And look how different we are.
Oh, good point.
So, and there's also hybridization, so there's mixing of different foods and genes within the crops, and no one has tested the results on human health.
And so we're assuming, the assumption is that with these genetic modifications that the body will know what to do with these mutations, and there's not, at this point, there's not enough scientific data one way or the other, so there's a big question mark, or I could be reading that wrong.
Well, I think there's starting to be some data that
okay.
It does change our own DNA, and so I think that's irreversible that we know of yet. We don't know if that is reversible, so I think I think it's already changing. People know, a lot of people know what genetically modified food is, and that's the good news. And so the attention on wheat, for example, by the book The Wheat Belly, has been wonderful for the public to know what they're eating. And it's made a huge difference, I know, here in Halifax, with the way people are looking at what they're eating. They had no idea how modified wheat was, and it's explaining a lot of why so many people are reacting to wheat and why so many people are trying to become healthy on whole grains. But
mm-hmm.
because whole grains aren't necessarily healthy. They've been so modified. And it's because we as a public have demanded cheap food, convenient food. So, you know, we've done that, and we've showed with our wallets 20 years ago, we want quick foods. And now we're starting to say, okay, no, we want real food. And we're willing to pay a little bit more, and we're willing to look for it.
So, Glenna, why is it called Wheat Belly? I know you attended a presentation last week with the author of this book. What's the connection with the belly?
Well, because wheat has a higher glycemic index than sugar. What that means is wheat elevates our blood sugar higher than processed white sugar does. So what does that mean? It's the same as what white sugar does. It increases our cortisol levels. And we think of insulin levels, and we think of that just in terms of a diabetic. But we all have to think about blood sugar and insulin levels in our body, because high insulin means inflammation, and it means storing fat. And where do we store it when we get high insulin? Right around our bellies, the most unhealthy place.
Okay, hence muffin top? Is that what
hence
that's
muffin top,
to?
Wheat belly
hence
muffin top.
Gotcha, okay, I'm here. Now, Madonna, do you have another tip, or are we going to move to your recipe?
I guess for me, it's all about loving food, right? If you're eating the food that's good for you, that's healthy, that's well-grown, you love the food, and you love the experience. And, one of my favorite quotes is from Julia Child, and she's had a huge impact in her lifetime on how we look at food, especially in North America. And she had a huge influence on me personally. And I believe in her mantra that she believed that cooking was love, that the most wonderful thing that you could do would be to cook something for someone who's close to you, and it was the greatest Valentine gift that you could give that person. Well, I think sometimes we need to give Valentine's gifts to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And food is an offering of love to ourselves and to the people in our lives.
I think you've just done a great job of helping us see how cooking for people doesn't have to be unhealthy. To show
mm-hmm.
love, we can cook them healthy, nourishing meals, and that is more loving than cooking them food that's not nourishing to them.
Exactly.
Now,
and to have good Capret music with it.
That's right.
Yes, which we're going to feature at the end of the show. We're going to feature Fish Cakes and Brandy by Outside Track. This is Madonna, this is your, we asked, for our listeners, we asked Madonna, if you were cooking, we know you have music on in the background, what are you listening to? And Madonna, Fish Cakes and Brandy, tell us a little bit about this group.
The Outside Track is an international group, really. The members are from Ireland, Scotland, Vancouver, British Columbia, and Mabu, Cape Breton. Maddie Rankin is really the leader of Outside Track, and they've been together about 2.5 years now. They're amazing young people, and they play Celtic music, lots of good fiddle music, and they have a new CD out. And one of the tunes on the CD is called Fish Cakes and Brandy. And it's a combination of a slow air and a fast tune halfway through, and it's just great. And I thought, what a great combination, you know?
Yeah.
Fish cakes are, for me, one of the quintessential Cape Breton foods that I grew up loving and still love to make, and why not a little shot of brandy with them?
While you're walking in the backyard with your bare feet.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Weeding my vegetable garden.
Now, Madonna, do you want to tell people your recipe, give them the concept of your recipe? We can post it on What's Your Prescription for Balance on Facebook, if that's your preference.
That would be great. But this is about as simple as it gets. I mentioned growing radishes a little while ago in the show, and one of my favorite things to do, I did it today. I had some of my girlfriends out for lunch, and one of the side that we had was baked radishes. Just take a bunch of radishes. You're going to cut the green tops off and the little tail. Chop a clove of garlic. Toss them in a tablespoon of olive oil with a half teaspoon of sea salt, a little tiny bit of ground pepper. Put them in the oven for about 15-20 minutes at 375 degrees Fahrenheit. And those radishes that people don't like to eat because they're too hot and sometimes bitter, the natural sugars are released, and they are delicious.
Mm-hmm. And I believe we even have a photo of you cooking the radishes on Facebook.
Yes, you do,
Madonna in action. Madonna in action.
See if you can find the glass of brandy in the background of the picture.
Yeah, it probably was. Either that or a glass of wine.
So, Madonna and Glenna, anything you'd like to say just to tie things up?
I'd like to let Madonna know that when she starts her first online cooking classes, I want to be signed up.
Okay, good enough. I was actually thinking about that today. It's time. It's time.
Great. Well, sign me up.
Madonna, we're going to do a vote, and I think the vote is there's three of us, and Glenna and I have voted.
Two to one?
Two to one. Yeah. Never trust Cape Bretons, right?
Well, we'll have to have guest chefs, right?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. So anything else you want to say, Madonna, just before we call it a day here and we beam off to the different areas where we all live? What would you like to share? Any nuggets?
Don't be afraid to keep it simple.
Okay.
You know, there is good food everywhere, you know. There really is. Just keep it simple.
And I liked what you said earlier. It's a step-by-step process.
Yes.
Keep it simple, step-by-step. And what happened to me is that I found each step that I would take, I started to develop an interest, and then I started to develop another interest, and one interest led to another interest, and before you know it, over months, you've acquired this knowledge and working knowledge that's in alignment with who you are. Things are feeling pretty good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'd like to thank Dr. Glenna in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and our special guest, Madonna McGinnis in Mabu, Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia, for being with us here today. And we are going to end our time together with a special song called Fish Cakes and Brandy by Outside Track. Thank you very much, Madonna and Glenna. Well, happy
Thanks, Mildred Lynn.
Okay, bye for now.
Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows. But don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisi Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows LIVE. Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.